WMST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are AM 1570. We're doing it here in the aftermath of the election, in the aftermath of the bye week. But we are get the Maryland Crab Cake Tour going. We're going to be on Friday at Pappas in Cockeysville. Looking forward to it. I got great, great guests coming by. Dan Roderick's going to be coming by talking about his one-man show and the Baltimore Sun. My man, David Steele, has written a new book on race and sports and culture. We'll be talking to him about that, as well as special guest Mike Bordick, who is bringing a more special guest, Adam Kolarik, a World Series champion from the Los Angeles Dodgers, and his pop, Frank Kolarik. We'll be talking about League of Dreams. I've been calling it Field of Dreams all week. League of Dreams. Taking care of great people. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I'll have some Raven scratch-offs to give away on Friday. Maybe you'll win $50 or $100, as well as our friends at Goodwill. Wearing my Goodwill gear here today. We're going to be serving less fortunate folks some turkey, some cranberry, some stuffing down at the convention center on Wednesday. My wife and I rolling our sleeves up. Appreciate our friends at Goodwill as well as Wise Markets. And last but never least, Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. I am staying very, very toasty warm inside the new facade with the new windows from Window Nation, so we are appreciative of that. Had an election in this country last week, and did not have this guy on before the election. Probably should have. I was a little in football mode a little bit. I was doing a little bit of political stuff in October, but a lot of it is with polls and whatnot. I don't believe the polls, and sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong, but this guy's been in the polling business for a long, long time, providing tools you need to measure public opinion, educate, and inform audiences, and achieve success. Patrick Gonzalez joins us back again from Gonzalez Research in the aftermath of another election. You done? Do you go to sleep for 6 months after an election, Patrick? Is that
what typically a couple of months, but I wouldn't call it the aftermath because we're still counting. So we still have a couple days maybe, and then we can call it the aftermath of the election.
If we were to ask the population, do you like counting votes a week and a half after an election? And that seemed to be a very Democratic Republican thing. Republicans didn't want the votes counted ahead of time. They want to have the television lie to everybody and tell them that they're winning so that they can declare victory. I've seen this, but I would think most Americans, most people in their state and their municipality, if you're mailing in to vote, why can't that be counted before? I mean, it feels like a charade, like a circus, that we're going to count these votes and have people question democracy, question the legitimacy of voting. And then that's dangerous. You know that.
Well, I mean, from a personal standpoint, I don't know how the average person feels. And I one thing I've learned in this business, Nestor, is to understand that we don't all think alike. And just because I think something's a great idea and assume everybody else should, it doesn't work that way. However, if I could make a suggestion and people would listen to me, I don't know all the mechanics of mail-in and voting these days, but if I could, I would, first of all, I'd count them when they come in, you know, mail-in votes, but I'd move everything back maybe a week. So in other words, if mail-in voting starts on October 7th, I'd move that back to October 1st. And if the postmark, and this is where the issue becomes, is Election Day, November 8th, I'd move that back a week. So everything stays the same. And if you forget to mail in your ballot by November 1st, you still have a week to go and vote in person.
I didn't want to screw around with signing up to get it. I did that 2 years ago during the plague and whatnot. I got a ballot. I dropped it off at Camden Yards in the big ballot thing, you know, and all that. And I didn't mind it. But this year I voted in person both times. Just because I'm 54 and it's what I do, you know, like I sort of do it to honor my mother because I want to, like, my mother's gone now. I always voted with my mother all of my adult lifehood. I picked her up. My mother was older and I just want to do it that way. I don't mind voting in person. I don't feel like running it through the computer. It's counted or not. When I mailed it in last year, I went online and saw that, oh, today's the day they counted my vote or whatever. But I mean, we can't even get that right, right? We can't even all agree on the right way to count the votes. It's insane.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit of a traditionalist, but I evolved. When they first started talking about early voting, I didn't like that because, again, I was used to Election Day. Well, once they started early voting, I got into the habit, and I now vote the first day of early voting. And guess where I voted?
You're a young old timer then.
I am a young old timer. And I live in Anne Arundel County. And guess where I voted?
Go ahead.
Early vote. Laurel Racetrack.
Oh,
I went in at 11 o'clock, only person voted, and then went over to the track and lost $300 or $400. It doesn't get any better than that.
I early voted in Randallstown for Hillary Clinton, whenever that was, 16, whatever that was. Yeah, I was out of town or out of the country. I was somewhere not here during the election. So that's another issue, you know, when you're you physically, if you're just not here because you have something else to do. I don't want to say we make voting difficult in the country, but I think it should be a holiday. I mean, they should give everybody off that day. We're voting. I mean, I believe that.
Yeah, no, I do too. And I am no expert on the mechanics of voting and mail-in voting, but I know Florida, because my buddy lives there, has a lot of mail-in votes and whatever the mechanism. But they,
well, all the Western states do, because nobody lives in a neighborhood. You live in Idaho, you would try 30 miles to vote, right? Literally.
So I don't know. The only thing that bothers me, and again, I don't know how most people, I've never polled on it, but the fact here we are a week later and we're still counting votes. That sort of seemed, we could fix that.
We could, right. We could make it better, no matter who you like or your candidates. All right. So what do you make of the Maryland election in general? A few things for me. I mean, the last 3 months I've had Wes on, and, you know, it felt like a formality that he was going to win. You know, he's calling it a mandate, and that's great. And wherever you get close to 70%, marijuana had that, cannabis had that as well. In total, you've done so many of these elections with your research and your polling. What did you learn from the results of this, or at least the ones we know about so far?
Well, the number one thing I learned is, and I think, and all, I don't think all the votes have been counted, but I think Wes Moore got a greater percentage of the vote than any gubernatorial candidate since Donald Schaefer. I mean, I know Hogan never got this kind of percent. I know O'Malley never got this. Glenn Denning never got this. I'm not even sure Schaefer in 90 got this percent. Back in 86, I think he did. So he certainly performed to those that assumed it was a foregone conclusion, because he and I would call it a mandate.
I mean, it's an incredible campaign he ran, right? Like, I sat with him 3 years ago this week. Literally, the picture popped up on my timeline. We did like a holiday show. Me and Moeller was early part of Baltimore Positive when I first started doing these. And he wasn't a political candidate. He was a dude who wrote a book, who was running this do good foundation, Robin Hood, up in New York. And he was trying to, in that interview, just say that I really live in Baltimore. Like, I live here. My kids go, we were here, you know, and that was part of, and then he became a candidate. And I thought, well, okay. I mean, there's a lot of candidates out there, but what is it about him that has allowed him over the last 18 months to come from political nowhere, never having been elected for anything, to getting this sort of, I mean, he's an impressive man. I don't think there's any question about that, but this has been, to your point, on a national stage, really an impressive thing. And a lot of people are talking about White House with him. I don't even want to, we haven't even been in Annapolis yet. I don't even want to talk about that. Yeah. But there is some rock star about him, right?
Well, the first I ever heard about him, I heard his name mentioned running for mayor 3 years ago. He was, you know, as a possible candidate. And so, I think he's got a good story, and is all politicians need when you look back in hindsight. He had a little bit of luck, and that little bit of luck was a crowded field in the primary. And because, as it turns out, Tom Perez, when all those votes were counted, was right on his heels. And it was just, you know, a question of, he had a whole lot of people here in the state supporting. I mean, I think the first person I ever heard saying that I'm coming out and endorsing Wes Moore was Don Moeller. And it was on this show a year and a half ago, whatever it was.
Don thought he was electable.
Yeah. Oh, no. Don
never liked me as a mayor candidate because he thought that I'm not electable. You know what I mean? That's how Don would look at it. And I guess as a pollster, that's a little bit of what you're trying to gauge is, like, will people actually come out and vote for this person?
Yeah. And that's what part of what polling does. And I think part of Wes Moore's polling was, okay, here he is, and let's just say he was at single digits behind. No one really knew who he was. And then they tested a few messages, and it was the pollster's conclusion. And I remember seeing this at the time that, you know, if this and this work, this is the type of message that can take you to the finish line. And it did. And I think in hindsight, and first of all, I've never met Westmore, but everybody I know who has says he's a great person. So I am a firm believer that when we start off each morning, if you're a good person, you got 90% of the day left. So I think Wes meets that criteria. And I think he worked hard. He did smart things. He listened to people. He had a lot of known quantities supporting him. And he had one fortuitous event. And that was Rashearn Baker, who was sort of a known, proven leader, who was going to pull chunks of votes out of the Washington area and other parts of the state. And I think when he suspended his campaign, that really forced a lot of people to kind of focus in and say, what is it I really want? And anytime you end up with an election that fundamentally was as close as that primary was when all the votes were counted, you know, every little bit helps. And so.
Well, Patrick Gonzalez is our guest. Gonzalez Research. He's a pollster. And as many folks know, I'm a little skeptical on the polls and certainly on the national side. I mean, there's a point for me, and I don't even know your politics, but the Fox News part of Red Wave and the cheerleading that goes on within the media. And you could accuse MSNBC of doing the same thing on the Democratic side of just providing some sort of myopic, not accurate view of what you want to happen as opposed to where the truth lies. And certainly the largesse that was Donald Trump and the dishonesty about everything about that man. I mean, he's a horrible human being to most of us. And the fact that all of the endorsements now, 6 years after he was made president, 3 years after a plague, that it's piled up a little bit, right? Like there were very, very few MAGA victories in any place that's an integrated place, including Arizona now, which is, it's just a stunt. I'm thinking, what would Goldwater think? What would McCain think of two senators and a governor from Arizona? It's amazing how off-putting the MAGA thing is to anybody that's not drinking the Kool-Aid.
What would Goldwater think? He would think extremism in the pursuit of liberty is no vice. And why would he think that? Because he said it. But back to the polling, I don't think it, and I don't have it all in front of me. If you looked hard at the numbers, I'm not sure the polling was off horribly much at all this time. I think what happens is you see a candidate like we'll cite Pennsylvania. You look at Mehmet Oz and you look at all of a sudden he's within a couple of points. Oh, my God. And then the future prediction takes hold. Oh, this means blah, 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 blah. It's going to be a red wave, blah, 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 blah. But if the general polling kind of had John Fetterman winning that election up, let me rephrase that, had the general polling had John Fetterman up by a couple of points, which I think is about where it was, that's what he ended up doing. And the same holds true really in all the different states. It was sort of, and I dig what you're saying about polling. I'm certainly have a different perspective, but I dig what you're saying. But I don't think polling is an issue, but it's the reportage of polling that creates the problems or creates the issues.
For you, when you put a poll together and they say plus minus 5%, like, you know, whatever all that is. And, you know, I get sideways with Malia Cromer because she calls it science. And I'm like, it's not science. I studied science. This is not a science. This is an art or it's a dance. And to some degree, my grown up part and my skepticism is born of who paid for it. If Fox 45 paid for it, Theroux must be winning. You're like, because I've seen this. That's why I just tune it out. I mean, it's kind of like preseason predictions in the sports space. Like, did anybody think the Eagles are going to be 8-1? Did anybody think the Vikings are going to be? That's why we go play the games, right? And I treat it in that same way as Sports Illustrated likes the Giants and the Ravens. They go, who cares? You know, let's go play the games. And I mean, I'm even that way with NFL drafts where this team's going to draft this and we're going to set the – why don't you just let the draft come? Let's talk about the players, because trying to be predictive of any of this stuff, that's why we actually do the voting. And I would say for these gubernatorial races that were MAGA versus non-MAGA in battleground places, not in Alabama, but in places where, or Arkansas, where, I mean, they've elected Sarah Huckabee. I mean, it's unbelievable. I watched her on television. I can't believe anybody thinks that that's leadership. But in the South, fine. But in these battleground places, Pennsylvania, Michigan, female candidates, female gubernatorial candidates, women vote. I mean, the country's changing dramatically. It really, really is. Despite the fact we have an old guy as President Biden, but the country's changing. I think Donald Trump has changed the country dramatically.
No, not one human being, Nestor. What's changed the country?
Well, he's made us all never vote for a Republican the rest of my life because the Republicans have all piled up to lie.
Well,
I mean, about
stolen
elections. I mean, like.
But, dude, it is a time-honored tradition. Stolen elections go back to 16, to 04, to 1960. Where people were saying they stole the election in Chicago from Nixon. So that doesn't bother me. I think, but you're right that the country is changing. And I think it's changing because when you and I were young, and unfortunately, I was young even a little bit longer ago than you were, we were totally driven by what Tom Brokaw called the greatest generation, the World War II people. And then they kind of drove things really up until the 90s. Then all of a sudden, the torch was passed and the Bill Clinton comes along. And then George Bush Jr., George W. Bush, you know, born baby boomers. And what's happening now, and I don't know all the terms for I know that you and
Gen
I.
Gen Z,
millennial, I don't know what. But now all of a sudden they're coming to the, and they're having. I mean, baby boomers such as myself certainly have grandkids. But now, whatever generation is after me, after a baby boomer, I think they're starting to have grandkids. So it's just the natural sort of thing, and it's different. I mean, the World War II generation was formed and framed in a lot by the whole Depression. Franklin Roosevelt and the programs and, you know, and so that
and
was
war and war. And,
oh, absolutely. And war. And I mean, war. I'm not talking about kind of the little conflicts we have these days or even so much the Vietnam War. I'm talking about existential life and death war, like World War II, like and so on.
Well, where the whole country feels it. I mean, my father wound up here working at Martin Marietta in the 40s building bombers because there was no work in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He was here for the country. And my impression, I wasn't around in 1945, but my impression is we were all pulling a rope the same way.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I wasn't here in 40. I'm old, but I ain't that old. and it had to be. Yeah, we had to pull together. And so I think in a lot of ways, you know, human beings wanting to feel useful and any, I think we create sort of over emphasize or over crisisize, if that's a word, certain different things to kind of make us feel that way. But when you're really put through, you know, those kind of times. But anyway, so now we're getting to a point where if you're, I would say 50 years old is a pretty middle age and getting up there and kind
of. I hope so. I'm 54. I hope I got 54 more left.
Well, if you're 50 years old today, you were born when Richard Nixon got reelected in 1972. That to me seems like yesterday. And the world changes. We've got a very complex, in some ways scary world. And we've got technology that I can't even dream of. And I was thinking about this the other day. I was kind of driven. I grew up with television. Television was pretty, was it. And I think of my parents and I think of my in-laws. They didn't know television. Well, look at the information dissemination we have now. And I kind of shy away from it. I was kind of scared to set this meeting up because am I going to be able to navigate my way through getting on this Zoom?
You sound good. You look good. Your hair is good. Your headset looks, you look professional.
It doesn't get any better than that. But I'm scared of technology, and it's left that world is left for others. But that world is our world now, and the people that are coming up and now approaching it. And I cite the age 50. I mean, they grew up with this stuff. So
well, what is Patrick, all that? I think polling was calling my mother on the phone in 1978. Or, you know, are you voting for Venatoulis or, you know, whatever, right?
Exactly.
How do you find people under the age of 30 to give any political information?
Honestly, it's easier today than it was 20 years ago. And I'll explain why. Okay. When I first got in this biz, it was my contention that polling worked for a whole bunch of reasons. Where you and I are in total sync, when I describe polling, it is absolutely an art, but there is a science to it too. The science part is to design sort of the samples, right? It's not science like mixing this chemical with this chemical, and it's always the same. Okay, when you mix just whatever, chemical X with chemical Y, 100% of the time, you are going to get this result. Now, when they talk about polling, and one of the reasons they talk about statistical margins of error, when you mix chemical X and chemical Y, there's no margin of error. It's 100% the same every time. And the statistical margin of error is to factor in, I think, the human factor. So it's not full-blown science, but let's say it's more social science. So it's a combination of art and science / social science. I think, as in with a lot of things in life, intent can play a huge factor in polling. So if your intent is to go in and honestly, as best you can, get a sense of where the universe you're trying to measure, in this case, the voters of Maryland, are in a particular contest or whatever, if you approach it with the honest trying to, as best as humanly possible, get to that, you'll get pretty close. But if your intent is to go in and push an agenda or something else, and that's why I come back to, yes, polling. Well, first of all, when I started in polling, there wasn't anybody else in Maryland. I mean, there wasn't anybody else in the country. Well, with the proliferation of technology, with all these news outlets needing to fill space, fill news holes, there's just this huge insatiable appetite for information. And polling, what is so appealing about polling is people want to think it can predict the future, because we all want to predict the future. And I think that's where it gets a little out of hand.
Patrick Gonzalez is here. He is at Gonzalez Research. He does polling and certainly in the political space, been doing a long, long time, as well as anybody here locally. And you're in Anne Arundel County. And by the time people listen to this one way or another, you know, I've known Stuart. I don't know Jessica Ware. Counting these things, that's probably where this conversation began, is in your county. You don't have a county executive yet, right?
No, here we are a week later. I think the most recent thing I saw is Harris' lead narrows to 3,000 votes. So I don't know where it's at. And, you know, I remember election night a week ago, I looked and I was kind of looking at different, and I thought, man, and I just made these assumptions, not fully thinking it through, thinking that it was going to end that night. Oh, okay. So-and-so won, so-and-so. And then all of a sudden I realized, no. There are a lot of votes out. So I heard election night, there were still 60,000 votes out. And then all of a sudden you got to kind of sit back and wait. But I still come back, and I don't know the how, but I definitely know there is a way we can keep everything exactly the same, but the votes end up being counted and known on election night. So,
well, a year ago, if we would have talked about Perez, and, you know, I had a crab cake with him last August on my crab cake tour, so 16 months ago, if we were to talk about Perez, Wes, certainly Francho, right? Anytime Francho's name would come up, Mueller would say out loud, and I call bullshit on this instantly, he's the most popular elected official in the state. Just got the most votes, right? So there was, and look, I spent a little time with Francho too. I've rarely met anyone as arrogant in the political space as Peter Francho. Just in a general sort of, the arrogance is the lead. And it felt like all along, he just thought he was going to win. He was just going to roll out and win. And I think a lot of people believe that. This time last year, if you had done a poll, you probably would have had him in the lead, right? I mean, it's amazing how quickly things can evaporate and things you take for granted, right? Maybe Stuart Pittman in some cases. And I know people thought Calvin Ball was going to have a harder battle where he was. And I think some folks thought Barry Glassman might do better with middle voters and have an opportunity to win there. But some of these things did hold serve to some degree, Patrick. Like I would say the Andy Harris, Heather Mazier thing, I was all about thinking like Heather Mazier would have a lane and an opportunity. She got clobbered, right?
Yeah, no, and you're right. You're exactly right. Why Don Mueller said Peter Francho is the most popular politician in the state because he got more votes than anybody. But
I don't think he was a known quantity at all. Peter Francho walked around Inner Harbor, nobody would have recognized.
But that was borne out in the polling that was done. And literally, I did a poll 3 years ago on the, and yes, he was the front runner. He was in front, but he was always, always just around 20%, no matter what the field was.
And that's the one in five people that knew him, knew who he was, right?
So, yeah. So to say, I mean, if you are a true, and I don't want to compare it to a situation where you have an incumbent, but a true front runner, no matter how many people he's running against or she's running against, they're up by 30 or 40 points. Or, you know, I'm exaggerating a little, but you get the drift.
They're up enough to win.
They're up enough and it's going to be tough. Peter, yes, would always be in first, but throughout. And that was the big danger signal. Was that he never really got beyond 20%. Now, I'm not sure what he ended up with on election day, but it was relatively close to that. So, but did you know, and this is just a little aside, Peter Francho is somehow related to the actor Francho Tone, who was on a Twilight Zone or an Alfred Hitchcock. But there's also a silent movie star somewhere in the family tree. And I don't know all the details. So if he has a little bit air of however you want to describe it, the Hollywood, the artiste in him, in his family, I can understand that. I'll forgive him that.
Patrick Gonzalez is here. He is from Gonzalez Research. Saw a little polling in the end. So, what's next? You know, like I would say, just having Westmore come in, having Brooke Learman come in, and people of color, women running the state, Democrats running this is, we're now a progressive state all of a sudden, right? We went from purple with a red governor,
right,
to all of a sudden, other than Andy Harris and maybe Jessica Hare, you know, like, well, Democrats are running the place here.
Where I take exception with describing Maryland as purple is there have in the last 42 years, there have been three people that I can name that have Republicans that have won statewide office. And I think maybe George Bush in the 1988 presidential election won by a slight, just teeny margin. But there are only three Republicans that have won statewide office since you and I were born. I'm exaggerating a little. Mac Mathias, Bob Ehrlich, and Larry Hogan. So Larry Hogan being the governor for the last 8 years and the impressive way he won last time suggested that maybe Maryland is purple. But
I voted for Hogan. I mean, I did. I mean, yeah. I'm a Democrat that voted for a Republican. I never thought I was partisan until Trump came along and people started parroting lies.
Right.
That's the end. That's the end for me.
That was it for you.
Well, I mean, it's brainwashing.
But it has nothing
to do with George Bush or Ronald Reagan or any sane Republican. I mean, what the last 6 years have done, it has isolated me on the side of those people are willing to lie. And I can't have that.
Well, the reason Larry Hogan won so decisively in 2018 was because Democrats like you voted for him. Pure and simple.
If he ran again and told me he was voting for Reagan and he's anti-Trump, certainly he wasn't on the ballot, but Kelly Schultz was, and she got hammered, right? Like, so for the red side of our state, And Patrick, I drove all over the state in the summer. I do the crab cake tour all from Oakland to Ocean City, you know, from Cambridge to, you know, Chestertown. I've been all over the state. It really is amazing when you get out of the city, how much red and how much Trump and how many guns and how many Confederate flags and how many F Biden and F Brandon. And like, I saw that everywhere, how that's Andy Harris's lane. Right. And there's a point for him to win an election after being an insurrectionist, taking guns into the Congress, not doing any media. He never answers a question. The sit down he did with the folks at the Cecil paper a couple weeks ago with Heather Mazur. Like, it's incredible how dug in the red side is on the Eastern Shore. And I, Western Maryland, we could talk about, but Heather Mazur got her clock cleaned, and I'm a little shocked because I thought she was a really good candidate.
Well, I mean, when you looked at the district, starting from Pocomoke City and just working up all the way and just kind of naturally that, I mean, if there's going to be a Republican, kind of district, that's it. And so I guess I wasn't terribly surprised.
Well, the gerrymandering of the Democrats made that sure, right? So let's pick on the Democrats.
No, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't call that gerrymandering at all. I'd call it the exact opposite. That's exactly how you would do the first district or at whatever number. You just come up geographically, and when you get to the number of people, boom, that's where gerrymandering is coming across the Bay Bridge.
That's Sarbanes district.
And picking up. Well, now actually that's better. Sarbanes district now is at least visually, you look at it, you say, okay, makes sense. I mean, it picks kind of divides. It's when it snakes down and looks like a salamander that you got to start kind of questioning. And when it goes from Harford County to Montgomery County, you got to say something, and you get my drift.
Well, I called it a Rorschach test is what I called it, ink blot. Yeah. Patrick Gonzalez is here. He will be working on all things elections after he enjoys Thanksgiving and the holidays and all that good stuff. What's next for you? I mean, how does it work that, let's say I wanted to be a candidate. Let's just pretend I'm running against Johnny O. I'm making that up because I wouldn't do that. But if someone wants a poll, how does it work to say you get paid, you do a poll? Usually it's media companies or Mr. Big calls Patrick and says, I need to poll East Baltimore County and find out why Crandall's doing well over there.
Well, I work very little for media companies. So every now and then. But a candidate, I mean, Nestor, I don't want to sound arrogant, but I've been around a long time. So almost all of my business is just sort of word of mouth. So-and-so suggested I call you and blah, blah, blah. So that's how I get. And I still have client bases that I've been working with for 30 years, you know, individuals who are involved in Harford County or Baltimore County or Anne Arundel County. And I just, you know, when there's an election, but my business is mostly Maryland elections. So we just had it. Now there'll be an election in next year. I don't think there are any elections. So
I'm not aware of.
So I better get online and start filling out my Social Security.
Nah, you relax. The election's over. Relax and let West take over and figure out Anne Arundel County. Hopefully by the end of the week, we get some.
Yeah, I think we'll know by the end of the week. So.
Hey, man, I appreciate you making time always and your insights. And I love that we don't agree on everything. That's what makes it good, man.
No, it makes it fun. I agree.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thank you, Nestor.
Patrick Gonzalez joining us from Anne Arundel County. He is Gonzalez Research. He's a pollster. And I love getting a variety of opinions on here. We've had a great week. Barry Trotz, former Stanley Cup head coach, joining us. Eugene Monroe came on at length from the Baltimore Ravens, former tackle for the Ravens in the cannabis space. He was the chairman of the statewide Vote for Four. And obviously, cannabis is going to be legal next year. You can go check that out as well. Just having great conversations. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore. Positive.